Remote Patrol is sponsored by Simply Everything. Visit simplysyndicated.com/everything to hear our entire back catalogue, new episodes before they're available as podcasts, and exclusive shows made just for Simply Everything, including every episode of Movies You Should See and the new series of Make It So.
I'm Jason Hawk, he's Richard Smith, and she's Allison Downing, and this is Remote Patrol, and tonight we're continuing to talk about Prime Suspect. Now, we've already talked about Prime Suspect 1, and we didn't talk about Prime Suspect 2.
No.
But we're just going to skip it.
Yeah. That one thematically dealt with racism, both in society and in the police force, which was a hot potato at the time, because... I mean, this week is the... Is it the 21st anniversary? 20? I can't remember. It's a long time since Stephen Lawrence was murdered simply because he was black.
Oh, 20th.
Is it the 20th? Yeah. So, you know, this was a big issue at the time in the UK.
Well, thank God we've solved racism since then.
Oh, you know, aren't we ever so good now? I mean, it really was... it was bad... for a particular family who felt that they were being hounded by the racist family next door, and the racist family next door didn't really see themselves as racist, and none of the police officers did either, even though there was a black police officer in the team. And what we found was that Jane was giving him really, really bad jobs, like the worst.
Well, we don't know, some of those job. Hotel room scenes were cut short.
Well, that's it, you see, because they were shagging, so she was probably not giving him the good stuff because she was already giving him the good stuff. But not because he was black, but that was not the way it was seen from the outside. So it's a really, really interesting story, and it I don't know, I wish I could do them all, but we can't, but it was good, so watch it, yeah? Right.
But you're the one calling the shots on this. Prime Suspect is your pick, Allison, so why not number two and why number three? What's the big cash there?
Well, this one gets dirty. Really grimy. And we've joined Jane at the beginning, where she has been passed over for that promotion that was coming up at Southampton Row, the station that we meet her at. And so she moves. She goes to Vice in Soho, which is probably the most exciting Vice squad in the entire country.
If you can describe it as such, I would imagine they see all sorts.
Well, all sorts indeed.
Yes.
Soho must be pretty busy. So she's with a lot of new officers, but some that we know, some that we're going to meet again from season one. We've got Otley's back.
Yeah, this is pretty much where he went to, isn't it?
Because
he got thrown out the way.
He got transferred out because he was a bad'un.
So now, as luck would have it, she's transferred to the place he got transferred to.
Yeah.
So he's
And it
back.
Appears that I was totally wrong, because last time we talked about Prime Suspect, it was my understanding that when they met up again, Otley and Jane would be buddy-buddy, that they would get along much better together, but he's just as dickish as ever.
Do you think he's a dick?
He's trying to play it subtly. He's saying, you know, last time that we faced off, it was a fair fight and I lost. So this time I'm going to try to shiv you in the back with my sneaky little moves.
Oh, yeah. But does he really hold on to that for very long? Because I think during all of this, I see a real big shift in him where he gets on her side. But he enjoys when things are difficult. You know, he can't help this grin spreading across his face when something horrible gets landed on a desk. He can't help that. But he gets
on board. So you're saying that he likes it because he likes the challenge?
Yeah, it's a sport to him. I really think it's a sport. He's an old copper with all value. He's always going to work the way he works. And he's an equal opportunist bigot. You know, he'll have a go at anybody. He'll have a go at women, call them dearie. All right, dearie. And then come out with quite a homophobic joke, or try to, before the rest of the office stamps on it. He doesn't care what his mouth says, but I think he sees Jane Tennyson as sport, ma'am. He likes the thrill of the chase. He wants her to do the job because he's a good copper, really. He wants to get the job done, but he wants to enjoy himself and see a struggle on the way.
See, I was reading it entirely differently. I was seeing it as not him necessarily enjoying the challenge of each new roadblock that's thrown up. More that he's absolutely just relishing every single second of her misery. Every time that Jane is dealt a blow, every time that Jane is dealt a setback, when she isn't successful, he's sitting there grinning in the corner.
Loves it. But the job's still being done. He doesn't want to not catch the bad guy because he's a copper and he really means his job. He wants to get the bad uns. But if he can have sport in the office, especially with his woman boss, my God, he's going to enjoy it. So he does a good thing. He does a good thing. He calls on an old favour to try and open a door to get more information. If he really hated her and was a complete adversary to her and had no desire to do this case, then I don't think he'd have done that at all.
I think we're going to have to really delve into the plot of this case because there are twists and turns and dual personalities and cross-dressing and all of these things, and it seems like a very 1980s, not even 90s, because this was made in the 90s, but it seems like a very 1980s view of transvestitism.
Things didn't really progress that much from the 80s until 1993.
I think it's a narrow view of transvestitism that's looking largely at drag queens and doesn't really stray too much in the area of transgender. Because they get it wrong, and it is a bit ham-fisted when they say, Connie lived here, and he said, like, well, why can't you do both, you know? You've got the Connie word, right? Why can't we give Connie a female gender?
I never really thought about this, and this would be interesting to talk about on Do Ask, Do Tell, little plug.
And it's used as a weapon, but, you know? Vera at one point clams up, and she gets called Vernon, which is the worst thing that you could ever say.
Oh, she says it to her.
To really
without
hurt
a doubt.
Her.
Yeah. But it's interesting that this as a concept, because it's something that in the UK in particular, we've always been okay with men in drag and various.
Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
Go right back.
Yes. Music hall.
Go further back.
Further back.
You know.
Shakespeare.
This is what I'm saying.
Cross-dressing in Twelfth Night.
This is what I'm saying. We are a country that originally had men playing every role in every production.
Yeah.
And so we are absolutely okay with people being in drag. Unless you meet one.
Then
it's an entirely
then
different thing.
Then we don't know
thing.
What language
and
we're supposed
we're
to
doing,
use.
We're only just becoming, sort of in the last decade, becoming more comfortable with that. And I think in 1993... So going back 20 years, depressingly enough.
Linda LaPlante was tackling good stuff.
It was a big issue, but it was one that I think there wasn't a lot of experience to deal with it.
No, there wasn't.
As we see, the whole thing has an underground feel to it.
Right.
And I don't
it,
just
it,
mean
well,
the,
it does because that's
not the,
that's
not
vice.
The paedophile ring, but the
straight out there.
No, but the idea of them, even the drag club. That is featured several times is a dark, dank, and seedy place.
It's really not. If you look closely at it,
but
it's
my point
not.
Is now there's one on Leeds High Street.
Well, yeah, they're everywhere.
And now they're everywhere. And you know, this is a different thing to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We actually have. I think we've probably come more along with transgendered people and cross-dressing people than we have with just outright gay and lesbian people. Mm. And I don't know why that would be, but I do feel, you know, and this is an interesting marker from sort of 20 years ago of how far we actually have come.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite a way, but bizarrely more than in other areas of that are actually quite similar.
It really is. Right. Shall we delve into plot then?
Can we talk about the cast first?
Well, yeah. Okay. Cast.
Just,
get that
just
out of the
briefly,
way. I mean.
More so, even more so than the first one that we talked about. This is one that if you tried to put it together as a Hollywood film now, it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be able to make it. Because again, you start off with having Helen Mirren, obviously. But you've now got David Thewlis from Harry Potter and many other productions.
Grimy little shit.
Peter Capaldi, who is extremely famous for creating In the Thick of It.
Wait. There's another Harry Potter link?
Well, there's several Harry Potter links here.
Because there was the Harry Potter link that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Did Harry Potter, like, dig down deep into the pockets and score some big-time actors that I didn't realize were on screen?
This is what I have. We are so small. There's only about 12 people here. So we are in a lot of things. So you'll see one guy in everything, you know?
I think it's kind of... I think
adverts for nappies and all kinds of stuff.
We have, a traditional career path for British actors that make it big. Is to start off in television.
Yeah, you've got to do the Bill or Casualty. Country.
Yeah, you've got to do your grunt work so that you'll be on Casualty, the Bill or Doctors. That's a given. I bet if we go through David Thewlis's IMDb, I don't even know this for a fact, but I'm willing to bet.
Are you doing it now? Are you
I'm
there
doing
now?
It right now. I bet if I go right there to the beginning of his list.
Right, it'll be in Casualty at least twice, I think.
You reckon we're going to see Casualty on
there?
Let's go back. Oh, it goes back, you know.
Oh, it's working.
Let's see. He's got an...
He was working only, as a kid, wasn't he? So.
It's only Fools and Horses. Oh, it goes back to 85. Singing Detective. Where are we? Come on, it's there. I know it's there. Where are you? Please don't make me look like an idiot on a live show. Or have to edit this show. I don't think it's there, Alison. I don't think he ever did any... No, he didn't.
Well, he was already in what? The Singing Detective?
Yeah.
That was big work.
Was it?
That was huge, The Singing Detective.
He's been in a lot of stuff, actually. The Big Lebowski. You might remember recently we spoke of that.
We did. Yeah.
Okay, so he's never done one of those things, but I'll get back to my point. You do television here, maybe make a bit of a name for yourself, then you go to America and start doing films.
Mm.
That's your ideal dream career path. And what happens is people become really famous in films. And then we end up finding TV shows from 20 years ago that have this really, really famous actor in, and no one had any idea. So, consequently, you've got David Thewlis, who has been in clearly everything. You've also got Mark Strong, who is now enormous, but he's...
And who has always been quite bald.
Sherlock Holmes, Body of Lies, Green Lantern, Zero Dark Thirty, Jack Carter. These are all big films. You know, Robin Hood, Kick-Ass. He's the baddie in Kick-Ass. Of course he is.
You know, I think Mark Strong was the only one that I recognized from the cast with one exception. Johnny Lee Miller, you got to throw him in there.
He was going to be the next person I mentioned, Johnny Lee Miller. He's a big... So again, the same thing.
Is he one of the little kids?
No, you can't fail to recognize him. He's the first older person who was...
Of course it is, yes. The guy with the blue tank top and the nice tie.
Yes.
And he's just wondering about his career now after his mother's breakdown.
That's I jumped up and pointed at the television.
Did you?
And yelled, "That's Johnny Lee Miller." And Lisa looked at me and said, "Who?" And I said, "Star of Dracula 2000. What don't you see here?" Star of Hackers.
I've also
his
just
Yorkshire
noticed...
accent was quite good, but he lost it on a couple of words.
Now, see, this is a weird one because I'm not ever positive whether he's American or British.
Oh, he's British.
Oh, he's very English.
Is he really?
Yeah.
See, we don't really recognize accents over here the way that you do because we have so very, very, very many of them. And because America is the melting pot country.
Yeah.
We just tend to look the other way when it comes to accents, especially the, you know, very, very slight ones. So when he pretends to a stereotypical Yankee accent in Hackers, it flies completely under my radar.
See, that's really weird because we've got way more accents per square mile than you guys. Way more. It's crazy.
I think that's it.
We can pinpoint streets where people live.
But that's exactly it. Because you're so much more compact, it really is about the population density.
Yeah.
You rub elbows with those people as you pass through the different neighborhoods. Here, we're so spread out, we don't notice it until we go from Ohio to when we finally get down to Oklahoma that there's a difference.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah, we see tiny gradients. really. And Bostonians, wow, where's that from?
Johnny Lee Miller was in two episodes of Casualty.
He was. Brilliant.
And his dad, his uncle, sorry, is of course Wedge Antilles from the Rebel Alliance.
No way.
Yeah. That's Dennis Lawson. Oh, no. Wait. No. He's Ewan McGregor's uncle.
All right. You're just remembering that wrong because they're in Trainspotting
together.
Johnny
Lee Miller's uncle is Bernard Lee, who's M in all the James Bond films.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's his uncle?
Or his granddad or something.
Well, he's confirmed British then, isn't he? Q's his granddad?
Yeah.
Come on. M's his granddad.
Yeah.
Can't get any more British than that, sir. Yeah.
Incidentally, Wedge Antilles. Desmond Llewellyn.
Yeah. Wedge Antilles, of course, is also in Casualty.
Really?
At the moment, yes.
Right.
But the one that surprised me was, what's his name? Mr. Double Barreled Surname.
Mr. Parker Jones.
Who is played by, had I seen his IMDb picture instead of just seeing him on Prime Suspect, I know who he is straight away, Kieran Hines, who looks nothing like he does in Prime Suspect anymore.
Right.
Not at all.
Totally unrecognisable, because he's quite young and reasonably dashing looking in Prime Suspect. Now he's quite rugged and haggard, and he's been in so many things it's ridiculous.
There will be blood.
Was he really?
He's in Game of Thrones at the moment. He's been in 9 episodes so far. John Carter again, The Woman in Black, Harry Potter. He's Aberforth Dumbledore. He's Dumbledore's fucking brother.
Fucking
hell. Harry Potter. He was in Ghost Rider. He was in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy with Mark Strong, who was also in this Prime Suspect. Oh my God, the links
are crazy.
It's been
in everything.
A movie called The Debt with what's her name?
He was in The Shitting Woman in Black.
Yes. So he was in Bruges. You see, we only have 12 actors and they're all in everything.
There you go, you see.
There you
go. Sadly, Americans don't recognize them.
Well, you know, I didn't. I only recognized David Thewlis and Johnny Lee Miller and who's the other one? Mark Strong. I had no idea that I'd seen that man at least 25, 30 times before.
Yeah, you have. You've just seen so many things that he's been in. So many. Road to Perdition.
Crazy.
Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. Many films. Munich. Miami Vice movie. He was
crazy.
King Herod in The Nativity Story. That must have been good. There you go. That's the cast of this show. And this little two-part drama on ITV. So you never know when you watch British TV. What will these people turn up in next? Eh?
Hey.
I must find a YouTube clip of Daniel Craig's performance in Drop the Dead Donkey, because that's hilarious well.
Is that the one where he had really long hair?
I don't think he had long hair. But he had 2 lines or something, and it was awful.
I saw a picture of him the other day with shoulder-length hair.
Oh, dear.
That one really threw me.
I saw that as well. Where, was that a Facebook post or something?
More than likely.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
So, shall we? Plot.
Let's delve into this.
Right, so she's gone, joined Vice in Soho, and she's been put on Operation Contract, which is about cleaning the streets up of rent boys, primarily.
Which was a term that threw both Lisa and I for a loop.
All right, you never heard that before.
Is that a common term?
Yeah.
Okay. So where we would say gigolos, this is gigolos plus pedophilia.
No. A rent boy could be whatever age.
Okay, so it's not limited to the realm of boy.
No, it's just people who rent their ass out.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, yeah, that's the term that's used, I guess. And
Is it implied that if you're a rent boy that you will put out as well, or is it more of a consort?
Oh, you're putting out.
Okay.
I just assumed it was another word for male prostitute.
Yeah, it is. It's a term that
with,
they'd use
with
themselves.
With a specific gay slant on it. I suppose women could use male prostitutes as well.
Yeah, but
they
wouldn't. They'd use escorts.
Well, that's, you call it what you like.
Yeah, but that's what they do call it, you know, if a woman hires a man.
My point exists, but
she's not going to hire a rent boy. A rent
boy
is for men.
Is a gay thing.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, in this area of London, it's a very gay-centric district. It's got lots of shops that sell all kinds of exotic paraphernalia. And it's that kind of a place, you know. So they want prostitution to be less visible in the area, so that's what she's doing. But pretty much on day one, a young boy is found burned in a flat. He's dead, and they're trying to figure out if he was murdered, whether the fire was set when he was alive, all that kind of thing. Because he wasn't in his own flat. He was in the flat of a drag performer called Vera, played by Peter Capaldi. And she doesn't know why he's dead either. So that's what we've got going on at the beginning. We've got a big bully running around as well, threatening people like Danny Dyer, saying, "Where is she? I don't know where Connie is." So we know that Connie's been sought and a young boy is burning alive. And Vera's singing Falling in Love Again, a drag review that she works at. So let's not beat about the bush. We've got a murder here. There's a head wound. We saw it at the very beginning. We know it's a murder, and we see somebody setting the fire. So they try and quash it. There's some old boy networking going on in this one that we've not really seen before to this extent, where we're privy to conversation between very senior officers talking about reining Jane in and limiting the investigation to just the murder of this young boy who was variously known as Colin or Connie or Bruce. So that's where we're at.
Okay.
In terms of Jane, well, we meet her. She's kind of having a little bit of a fling with an American criminal psychologist who she's clearly had a fling with before. And he's on a book tour, and there's squeeze of a few little rendezvous in there as well. But she makes it very clear that she's choosing a career once more over him. But he chose a wife and four kids anyway.
Her personal story in this episode or this movie or this miniseries, this season, however you want to classify it, seemed really disjointed to me. It seemed very tacked on. Usually if you're going to do something with a personal story of your protagonist and the external conflict, if you're going to tell a story about what she's wrestling with personally and about the murder, you're going to tie them together thematically somehow. And while that was there to a very small extent, I really didn't feel like the writers did a very good job of bringing in her whole pregnancy deal.
No, well,
I think that comes around more in the next one.
Yeah.
So more of a setup than anything.
Yeah.
Because it introduces it at the very beginning and then ties it together at the end, and you hear nothing about it in between except phone messages from a doctor.
Have you not understood this about Jane Tennyson yet? She's busy. She's got a job to do. That's what matters. So even though this pregnancy's encroached upon her, and she's already quit smoking, so that's not an issue, and all the rest of it, there is no way, really, in Jane's head that she's even going to think about being pregnant. Well, she's got a murderer loose. It's just not the way she operates. She chooses her job over everything. So I understand why they're like, "You're pregnant? Okay, right, I'm busy. I'm doing this."
Do we know why she is that way? In American television, it would be customary. It would be required legally, I believe, to explain through some sort of a flashback that when she was 4 years old, her parents were murdered, and that's why she's so dogmatic chasing down her.
So people can't just be who they are.
Exactly.
We need to completely dissect their life and where that motivation once came from.
That's right.
Yeah, there's none of that.
She's just born that way. She really was. She's just born that way. She's dogged. She's never going to give up. And she's very, very, very ambitious. I mean, in this, she's detective superintendent, isn't she? What is she?
Detective superintendent. Chief super... she's the boss of her department, is what she is. Yeah. But I am terrible with police
she's
ranks.
She's gone higher. She's gone higher.
There's too many words.
Let's
in
have them. A look on IMDb. DCI, Detective Chief Inspector.
Right, because she's shooting for superintendent through the episode.
She is, but I think we get to see how dirty and grimy that job actually is. Do you find this as well, Jason, in your career or in previous employment, that there's a sweet spot in the organisation and then there's the man who's in the middle of everything who is like a shit sandwich? and he has to deal with all the shit coming up from the bottom and all the shit raining down on him from the top.
You're describing my job, Alice. That's my job, day in and day out. I'm the guy who's in charge of just enough to get pummeled from above and pummeled from behind.
Yeah. So it does happen.
That
happens
came out
everywhere. Early. Well, pummel from behind.
I could have chosen a better way to say that in light of the subject matter for tonight.
I quite liked it, though. It was apropos, so.
Thank you.
We'll let it go. Yeah, so this that job. And it looks like in this line of work, a superintendent is that person.
I would agree so. It seems that way.
She gets to do a job. She gets to investigate. She gets to lead a team doing the hog work. And then there's somebody above her going, do that, don't do that. Tell me what you've done here. What is this? Sort that out. You're not doing that anymore. Get this person to do it. And is completely puppeteered by people above him. And it's just grimy. It starts at the beginning when we see Kennington retiring and a whole room of people and some quite sickened people in that room celebrating his retirement and figuring out who's going to replace him.
You know, that's a weird trope in any kind of movie that has to do with cops. It's never the captain who is the hero of the show. It's always the two rogue sergeants.
Yeah, captain.
You'd better get your asses in line, yeah. Copperfield and Jimmy.
Yeah, and you've been running all over town. You're just being too visible.
Stop. We're pissing the captain off. I don't care, Joe. We're going to take him down.
Get the job done, Joe.
Yeah. Never the captain that gets to be the hero.
I'd like to make a film out of what you two just did. That
good,
sounds
that,
pretty good.
It, yeah. We should pitch that. Somewhere.
I'd watch that. Put
some
Samuel L. Jackson. It'd be awesome.
So, yeah, we get a lot of crossover here. We've got an officer who comes into the team. He's called Ray Hebden. He sort of floats in. Nobody really says a word, but we start hearing a few homophobic comments because the victim in this case was a rent boy, a male prostitute.
But it leads to my favorite scene in the entire episode.
The showdown.
Well, not really. It's where the cop stands up and says, I'm gay.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That moment in time.
And he just says it so matter-of-factly, and he looks at the guys who are making fun of it. He's like, yeah, what about it?
Mm. It was a great little scene because they were talking about something completely different. They were trying to locate gay bars, gay clubs, where people might hang around, particularly maybe these high-ranking people, whoever they might be. And they're trying to work that out. And this guy's got knowledge, you know. Well, this bar's this and that bar's this. If they're going to go anywhere, they're going to go to this particular club. How do you know? Well, I'm a member. Ha, ha, ha. Well, yeah, it's because I'm gay. Okay.
And what I liked the best about that is the whole time the writers were telling me this is the cool cop.
Yeah.
That's the guy who's going to, you know, get the job done. He's a cool cop. Look at him. He's got the good suit. He's taking care of business. He's chasing down the leads. He's a cool cop. Oh, he's gay.
Yeah. He's got a nice leather jacket as well. And
I like that
longer
about
hair
it,
than the rest of them.
All the way through, you're getting this sort of reinforced. And again, it's 1993, so things are still not as great as they could be. You're getting it reinforced that the gays are the pedophiles and the cross-dressers and all these other things. And you just need this one character that goes, and also that perfectly normal guy who was no different from anybody else.
Which is really surprising for the year that this was made. Because yeah. Right now we look at it and we're like, okay, fine. A third of people on TV are gay. Whoop-de-doo. So he came out. But in 1993 or 4, whenever this was made, every 40 and 50-year-old blue hair sitting in their recliner chair chugging a pint after work that spat up or inhaled wrong after that came out, that's points on the chalkboard for me.
I honestly think, and this came up when we were watching that Davina McCall quiz show the other day.
Oh, yeah.
We're now at the point where...
5 minutes to a fortune.
We're avoiding talking about gay people or just accepting gay people as normal people on television
those guys.
Is becoming far more conspicuous and awkward.
It really is. Let guys
else.
Just give each other a kiss when they've won £33,000. I mean, come on.
It was a gay couple on a quiz show.
There's any moment that will tolerate a snog, it's when you've fucking won some money.
You
know, it was cringy, wasn't it? It was like, oh, I want to hug you and I can't.
And they were on as friends in inverted commas
it's
and all that.
It's a shame, because we're more ready for it than producers give us credit for. It's ridiculous.
But it was 5 o'clock. It was
tea time. Oh, we don't have gays at tea time.
It just just became
very subtle.
So perfectly obvious that it's disgusting that love and happiness are confined to be appropriate for after the watershed.
Mm.
Oh my God, Allison! The cops in our movie—they have to be gay.
They have to be.
They're partners at work and partners at home.
We've got that.
Awesome.
Was it in the Fast? Is it Fast Show where they've got the two Dutch gay cops? Yes. Like to smoke weed and maybe kiss a bit.
I don't know.
Can't remember them.
Can't remember that one.
Oh my God, they already exist. Yeah, they just go around, maybe smoke a bit of weed, maybe have a bit of a kiss.
You two better get your asses in line, fabulously.
See, that whole statement takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
I know we're getting rammed here, guys, but keep going.
Get your ass in line. Okay, who's first?
Stop it.
It's bad.
So anyway, we've got homophobia present here, and Bill tries it out. They're giving out the fairy of the week, and he gets cut down at that point by a woman saying, well, we were doing prick of the week and we're going to give it to you, but turns out you've been a prick since you got here, which is perfect. And it's so great that a woman did that, not a guy. I love it. It's a big power shifting moment for Bill Ottley, that one.
But again, they do a good job of showing that the one guy with outspoken hatred or uncomfort is the one guy who is, as you said, he's a non-discriminating discriminator. You said it better than that. He hates everybody.
He's an equal opportunity bigot.
That's it. He's just the local dickhead. You know, of course he's going to come up with Fairy of the Week and stuff like that.
But there's real homophobia.
The other dude who gets angry in terms of fear. Yeah, the dude who gets angry in the toilet.
It's Dalton.
The
high flyer who's been shipped in from Scotland Yard, which is the business when you're being a copper in England. If you're at Scotland Yard, you've made it. And he's been shipped in from there to do this little murder of a gay sex worker. Are you serious? Why is he here? But it's him who's most uncomfortable with Hebden's sexuality and just cannot deal with it. And he feels like he's been betrayed in some way.
Yeah.
And maybe that he's been perving over him since the day he got there. And how dare you think that you're that hot? Because you're not. You've got weird eyes and you've got floppy hair.
And now maybe AIDS.
Which is really not going to happen. But anyway, he's not very nice. He's Weasley, and he's being puppeteered by the big guys, and you can see that straight away. We know Dalton's up to something. He's reporting back.
It's good, you know. It's gritty, isn't it?
It is gritty.
It's very gritty.
You know, there's scenes of glue sniffing, which is just... You know, again, thinking about it in the context of the mid-90s, that was pretty big, you know, seeing a 12-year-old kid hunched over a bag of glue.
Did they still do it? Because they were always on at me at school, don't be sniffing glue.
You can't really get it past anybody anymore, and no adult's going to buy a 12-year-old glue. It's horrible.
Right.
So it doesn't really happen. Some kids will have a go at it, but there's really cheaper highs out there now.
It's happening here an awful lot.
Is it?
Yeah, it seems to be hitting middle America right about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, heroin's getting cheaper and pills are getting cheaper, but at the same time, some of your traditional drugs are getting more expensive.
Yeah.
So getting your hands on glue is not tough, and it's not expensive in any measure. You get your middle school kids, your junior high kids doing it.
Is there no law barring a 12-year-old from buying a solvent-based glue?
Oh, I'm sure that there is, but there's also laws barring kids from getting beer, and that's easier than anything.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, there's not too many shop owners who are extra, extra vigilant about glue.
Yeah. I mean,
and there's so many other ways to do it than glue.
Exactly. That's the thing. And alcohol is so cheap right now that most kids would be doing alcohol and really cheap drugs like...
Yeah, you want your White Lightning cider.
The MCATs and whatever else comes on that's £10 a gram. Ugh.
Dirty, dirty stuff. Anyway.
So, yeah, we... Glue sniffing, child, and retorting as well. What do you think I'm doing? Building a plane?
If he was, he was doing it wrong.
He was. He was. He shouldn't have been breathing into that bag like that.
You can't get high off plane glue.
Anymore.
So it says on the bottle. I'm kind of struggling with to come up with anything specific now further on. I feel like we've just blanketed it in the first sort of 20 minutes.
Well, as it progresses, the same name keeps on popping up over and over and over and over and over again, to the point where Lisa was kind of sick about hearing about the damn guy. But Edward Parker Jones, he seems to be where all roads lead to.
Yeah, he's running this advice center where all the kids, the runaways, the sex workers come there to hang out and whatever, but it's shady. You've got all kinds of horrible messages going up on the board that I wouldn't tolerate in any service of mine. You know, people asking for male models and things like that, and photographers offering sessions. And he's got a guy there as well, David Fulis's character, is James Jackson, the guy we see bullying one of these kids right at the very opening. He's really horrible. We see him quite a few times bullying these street kids that the story is he picks them up at railway stations. He gives them food, he gives them somewhere to stay, and they become indebted to him. And he then becomes their pimp. So we know that this guy's going there, and these guys are giving each other an alibi for the period of time where Connie's been killed and set on fire. So they're just the dodgiest people ever. And he's the world champion at non-blinkage.
David Fulis?
No, Parker Jones.
Oh, right, yeah.
He just stares. And it's not too long before we get revealed that he's friends with a police officer. But we're not getting any names yet, but he's friends with the police officer. So immediately we know this is going on. There's some kind of quashing going from the top down. He's buddies with whoever's doing that.
And that's when Jane gets warned to stay away from Edward Parker Jones.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse that you could possibly do if you're someone trying to keep Jane Tennyson away than to tell her to get away from that person.
Yeah, they don't know how to manage her.
And I mean, she just chomps onto that guy.
And it makes me think for the first time, hang on a minute, she doesn't want what comes with that role. She doesn't want the super role at all. Because then you get into dirty politics and not actually doing policing because you're being prevented to protect people. And I think that just does not jive with her morals and her values as a police officer.
Why is it then that you think that she goes after it so tough? Because she really, really wants that job through the rest of the show. Do you think that she's going to be the missionary? Did she have it worked out in her head that she's going to change things from the middle?
I don't know. I think it just boils down to getting the job done, finding
the bad
guy.
It does seem like an odd obsession that she suddenly develops, that she wants that job. And she's willing to sacrifice the case at one point to get that job.
Yeah. Not really, though. Not really. I don't think she's ever going to be ready to be that person. Because she's not going to get to go out to housing estates and advice centres and visiting old boys of the children's home that Parker Jones ran in different cities across the UK. She loves that shit. She's the first one on the train. She's the first one out there. Come on, let's go. Let's do something fun. She's not going to get that, Superintendent. I think that this is a process of her realising all this. You know, we haven't watched ahead. So
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. You obviously know her character a lot better than I do, so you might know some motivations that I haven't grasped onto yet. But it does really seem like she guns for that job, something fierce, right at a critical point in the case. And it seemed very incongruous to me that she would do that after some of the moves that she's made before. So it threw up some danger flags about maybe there were ulterior motives, or maybe she was thinking that was a way to manage her pregnancy eventually.
I don't know. I think on paper she knows what she wants. On paper she sees herself maybe as commander and have the whole fleet behind her. But that's on paper. The reality is that she would have to be a grimy person and probably do bad things in the name of catching the bad guy. Or not catching the bad guy. So it's going to bring your whole philosophy into question about why you're doing that job. Why do you even want super? Is it about what your values are, or is it something a lot darker and seedier than that? So she's got a lot to play around with, and all of this while she's not thinking about being pregnant.
During this whole big middle bit, it does seem to boil down to them trying to erase the alibis of the key players to get at Edward Parker Jones. And I think that's probably the biggest weakness of this particular season.
That's all it took was just demolishing alibis?
No, not necessarily that it was all that it took, but I think that they could have gone about those alibis in a 3-minute kind of sequence instead of spending so much time on it. Not necessarily 3 minutes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The running time could have been cut down significantly. They could have edited it a lot better.
Yeah.
It shouldn't necessarily have gone to a montage, but that's kind of what I wanted at one point. I was like, okay, we get where you're going.
Some nice split screen 70s action. We could split the screen in five so that we could get all five alibis going. No, I said it because I thought he was going to kick me fucking head in. And then all five of them rescinding so that there's no alibi that supports the other apart from the two dodgiest people that we can lay eyes on, really.
A really clever director could have gotten it down to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But then what would you have watched on Sunday night? You know, they've got time to fill. Come on, ad breaks and everything. You know how this works. I've just been looking up, God, I forgot his name already. Kieran Hines. And I've just totally ruined the next season of Game of Thrones myself.
Oh, you haven't?
Didn't even know I was doing it.
Ridiculous.
Because he's in that. He's the leader of the wildlings north of the wall.
Right.
With Jon Snow.
And Jon Snow.
And I went to look up the character on Wikipedia, and it's just told me his entire plot line.
All right.
So it's, oh, great. That's awesome, that.
Is he the one that says, Jon Snow, you don't know stuff? I got that right? Pretty sure.
I don't know.
I don't know.
You don't do things the correct way, Jon Snow.
I don't know.
Are you quoting Game of Thrones, really?
Just a joke. It's Jon Snow, you know nothing, but whatever. Forget it.
He does his best.
I do know nothing. It's true.
Jon Snow, you don't have a firm grasp on the situation and the details surrounding it.
None of them do. I love that show. It's Theon Greyjoy I feel the worst for at the moment. He's not having a good time, is he?
He doesn't deserve a good time.
He doesn't. He's a weaselly little shit, and I hate him.
But that's the problem with that show, is that there are very few characters to actually like.
And you know, the thing is, though, with Theon Greyjoy, I actually think he's the worst actor out of all the people in all of Game of Thrones. Was that it playing? You don't have to show me.
I want to do it again. Do it again.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Jon Snow.
It's exactly how I said it, too.
It really is. You know.
Jon Snow, you don't know shit.
I just love that the whole universe of Game of Thrones is
nothing,
filled with
Jon
the population
Snow.
Of Sheffield. It's brilliant. They're all miners and soldiers. That's what they do. It's brilliant. It makes me feel like home. I bet the Henderson's relish consumption at King's Landing is quite high.
I think, oh, bloody hell, it will be as well.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Sean Bean loves it.
And they'll all stop work on Saturday to watch football, especially when Wednesday play United.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I think it's too soon to be invoking Sean Bean. He's dead, you know.
Give over. We love John Stark. He will live in our hearts forever. Oh, Ned, even. John's beloved dad.
I hate
he will live in our hearts forever. The one true king.
Every time we watch it, I kind of, and I don't mean this badly, Alison, and it's not that you're the only one that goes through this, but I kind of have to tell you who everyone is and what they're doing and where they are.
I don't know who anybody is.
Every episode.
Yeah, I know.
But you seem to enjoy it and like it.
I do, it's fun, but you know, I have to just go, and why are they there now? Why, where have they just come from now?
Who's he? Is he this one?
Who's this fella here? Why has she got no hand?
The whole thing, every episode. Don't even remember one week to the next. Anyway, Prime Suspect. I have nothing further to say.
You have nothing.
This is what I'm
retiring from.
I'm filling with crap about Game of Thrones is what I'm doing. I have nothing further to say.
Well, maybe we should wrap it up this way. The last Prime Suspect that we watched, the first one, was rated something like 8.3, I believe, mm-hmm. if memory serves.
Yeah.
This one is only rated 7.9. Discuss.
I think it's fair for the points that you've discussed. The reveal of the alibis, the smashing of the alibis could have happened a lot sooner. I kind of get why they did it. They wove it through. And they made it like not everybody boy was available at the time, or they were saying yes I'll help you and then no I won't because of the pressure that Jackson was putting them under. So it was a device that was probably too long. So yeah, I think that's fair.
This one didn't grab me as much as the first
did
one.
Did it not?
I mean,
I loved it because I think this is a lot more performance centered, and we've got Peter Capaldi playing a transsexual woman.
His performance was the best one in it by a long shot.
It was phenomenal.
And what stands out now watching it 20 years in hindsight is he has become so famous for being a character that couldn't be more the opposite yeah. of this timid, quiet transsexual called Vera to being just known for someone who can work swearing like painters do with paint on a canvas. It's incredible what that man can do. He's invented words that are now in the fucking dictionary, for God's sake. And yet, here he is, playing Vera. It's remarkable. It's worth seeing just for that, especially if you're a fan of In the Thick of It.
Yeah.
If you've never seen that, I might have to pick that next.
Okay.
But we'll see. We've got something else to get through before I have another choice. But more of that later.
And what's your opinion of the score then, Jason?
I think it's fair. I think that from a mechanical standpoint, the show earned that. However, like Rich, I had trouble getting into this particular episode, and I think it's just because I had so few contact points with the subject matter.
Yeah. And there were a lot of people in it as well, so it was hard to track faces.
Yes, especially when sometimes they would put on makeup or change their appearance or appear in different kind of clothing. It made it somewhat hard to track who the different people were, and changing names, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was very good.
Good stuff.
And I thought about it for several days after I watched it, which is the mark of a good TV
it
show.
It really is, isn't it? If it stays with you a little while and you start to unpick it a little bit a few days later, then it got you. And that's good. I like that.
So I give it 2 thumbs up. Do we get to give more Prime Suspect thumbs up?
Well,
I feel we're done with Prime Suspect. I mean, I ran out of things to say about this one. So, as much as I love it and will continue to watch all the others, I don't know what else I will have to say about them. That is a whole show's worth of stuff.
Okay.
Do you think there's more?
I think there was one more.
I don't know.
I think we could do 7, at least.
What, you think we should do the last one?
Yeah.
I thought she meant 7 episodes. I was going to say, that's a stretch.
That's a stretch. it gets different because Prime Suspect 4 is actually 3 entirely separate stories. It, as we've seen for the first three, they're two extended movies, shown back to back. Well, on two separate nights. But the fourth season, there's three completely separate stories to season four. So I propose we jump that one and maybe just go to the end so we at least resolve Jane's story.
That's actually what I was going to ask you. Does seven end the story, or is there an eight planned?
I think,
believe seven ends it.
I think Helen Mirren's far too famous to do Prime Suspect again.
Depends on how much ITV pay her.
ITV haven't got the money to pay Helen Mirren.
Well, they're making some really good drama again, apparently. You know, I don't want to write them off. I am missing stuff on ITV because I do have preconceived ideas about their content. But, you know, they're getting really high-rated dramas.
That one they've just done with David Tennant was apparently very good.
You see?
But David Tennant costs a crap ton less money than Helen Mirren because he's never been in a film with Bruce Willis.
I don't know.
He was probably in Casualty.
I mean, what's to say that someone like Jane Tennison would have retired comfortably by now? She would have done a tenured position. Because this is the other thing. The way that the police force was structured changed around this period, maybe a little bit later, where it just didn't pay you to be in the police force any more than 30 years. So ideally, you quit on year 29, day 364, and you walk away with a massive pension. And if you don't, then your pension gets degraded. So it becomes pointless you working because you're just getting the same money or potentially less than you could if you just damn well walk away after 30 years. So she's got all this coming up for her. I mean, she's cracking on in these. She'll just go.
There you go then. So we'll do one more. You're just putting off the inevitable.
The pain.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Have you had any further thoughts, Jason, on what your next choice is going to be?
I've picked it.
All right. Would now be too early to say, or do we have to wait until next week? Or
I suppose I can ruin it. I've already started watching it.
Well,
in order to punish you to the fullest extent.
Oh, damn you.
With the worst possible content that I can find. I think that we're going to have to watch the BBC version of Sherlock.
Mm.
Oh, now that's good.
That's no problem.
Oh,
see what I did there?
Oh my God.
I see what you did there.
I've just deflated now. That's awesome.
That's good sales technique, sir.
For that.
Well, I decided to step out of character there for a while. We won't run you through some of the really bad 70s TV. We'll just do, Martin Freeman.
Awesome.
And Benedict Cumberbatch. And in some way, it will be to celebrate the new Star Trek movie.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Awesome.
I do like a bit of Sherlock.
That is the ulterior motive for watching that, by the way. I flicked it on to get Lisa into Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, that's an easy thing to do. Just give him 10 minutes. That's it. Really? It's lovely.
And then I can drag her to Star Trek Into Darkness.
Awesome. Yeah, do it. Yeah, that'll work.
So that's how that's going to work.
Oh, are we going to see Iron Man tomorrow?
I believe so.
We should do that.
Oh, I have to apply for a job tomorrow.
I have other things to do. I bet we
really think I needed to apply for, but hey ho.
Probably go on Friday.
Yeah, actually, something like that.
We'll do that then. Could have gone tonight. Could have. I was invited to a midnight screening of Iron Man 3, and I was like, no, I'm doing remote patrol. That's what I was like.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, somewhere in Leeds, Robert Downey Jr. is giving it his all. It's fine, though. This is more fun. So, is that... That's our show for this week, isn't it? I think so.
I believe so.
We'll be back.
I believe so.
With another show.
We'll be back to conclude with Jane Tennison.
Yeah, we will. And it'll be next week.
Isn't it good, though, getting the bad guys? Oh, yeah. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, it is.
Especially when they're that big.
As long as you don't turn into one of the bad guys yourself in the process.
Well, this is the moral...
Watch the movie
point,
ID. That's the film about that. I love that film. I've not watched it for years. But that's all about that. Don't become the bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Football hooligans. Ooh,
and
Sean Pertwee.
Thank you, Gab, by the way.
So, we'll be back next week with another show. If you want to email us, you can do remotepatrol@simplysyndicated.com. Don't forget, you can go and check out all our other stuff on Simply Everything. I'll probably put an advert on this show at the beginning or something to remind you about that. I think that's everything for now. So, thank you for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Go watch Prime Suspect.